Well, subscribers, today we're going to be talking to Roger Lear. Dr. Roger Lear is familiar, of course, to all of you. His website, alienscalpel.com, where you can keep up with his amazing career and his extraordinary struggle in trying to remove and understand implants. Most of you have probably already listened to this week's Dreamland, where we talked to a scientist we are calling John Smith, who is one of the scientists who have recently come forward and who with implants or with contact. And some of these are very important scientists, such as this man. He works in the area of nanotechnology, and he had an object in his toe. And what we're going to do today is this with Dr. Lear. Dr. Lear, we've heard from the scientist. We've heard his close encounter experiences. We've heard his opinions about what happened to him and his object. And now we're going to hear from the man who actually first met John Smith. And Roger, when did you know for certain that this man had something unusual in his body?
Well, Whitley, it was another little bit of synchronicity on my part. I thought this gentleman was coming in to see me with a general toe problem. I did not know that he was involved with the abduction phenomena at the time. So, basically,
he came without telling you.
Right, he came in and wanted to see me in regards to a foreign object in his toe, and so I examined him and palpated the area, did a routine examination, filled out a history and physical and so on, and we sent him out for x-rays. And when we got the x-ray back, it was positive for a metallic foreign body in the toe.
And he'd given you no indication of his contact experiences at all at that point.
Right. And it was only on the second visit.
Interesting. He's a very interesting and careful man. I'm not surprised at this at all.
Yes, he is. I mean, he doesn't...
He knew darn well why he was there. He'd probably already found your website and everything.
I found out, yes, he had. He already knew who
I was.
He
knew exactly who you were.
And
it was no accident.
Right, and he just happened to work in an area where I had an office, which was even another bit of synchronicity.
Yeah.
So we did an examination, as I said, and we looked at the x-rays, and it was positive, and then he began to tell me his history regarding the alien abduction phenomena. And I realized, of course, right away this was not an ordinary foot patient, that he was there because of the object that he had in his toe, and it was bothering him in two ways. Number one, he had a pain in the area, and number two, just having it in him was psychologically painful.
Yeah, I understand that psychological pain very well. I live with it myself, as you know, because I'm very torn about what do I do with my own, but that's not what we're talking about today. You know what, Roger, one of the things that absolutely fascinates me is the fact that you have picked up signals from a number of these objects. How many have you actually picked up a signal from at this point?
At this point, we've picked up radio signals from four.
From four, including this one?
Including this one.
Now, is there any common ground with these signals?
Well, other than all being in the FM band, I'm not sure that the frequencies are similar in all cases. The only case that we looked into in depth as to where the frequency bore was in the, I think it was the 13th surgery we did. And that one I had sent to Bigelow Aerospace, and they, Bob Bigelow, sent me back a chart from the FCC in which he had circled a range of frequencies which were fixed or mobile deep space communication frequencies.
Deep space communications frequencies, which gets me back to the gentleman who hacked supposedly NASA's computer system and said that he had seen in it evidence of deep space activities, that we actually, there were crews somewhere in deep space and things. So, you know, you have to wonder what we're looking at here.
Oh, definitely. When I saw that, it threw a totally different light on the subject of what was really going on.
Yeah, of course it did.
In the first place, if you're truly dealing with...
Gary McKinnon, I'm sorry, I didn't remember his name right away.
Right. If you're truly dealing with a non-terrestrial entity who was... you know, just goes along with Michio Kaku's theory of advancement of the species, you know, certainly a class 2 or class 3 civilization, why in the world would they be operating within the electromagnetic spectrum of a radio frequency?
When you say class 2 or class 3 civilization, could you explain to us what you mean by that?
Michio Kaku is a noted astrophysicist.
Right. Oh, yeah. We've had him on the show. He's
right.
Terrific,
yeah. Wonderful man. Yeah. And he's very classified courageous civilizations as far as their advancement, what they can do with their science. And for example, the human civilization, the earthly civilization, is not yet a class 1 civilization.
Right.
So when you talk about class 2 or class 3, you can see that they're much older and much more advanced, and have controls over the laws of the physics of not only their local area of the universe or galaxy, but maybe beyond, and have a much better understanding of the laws of the universe
than we do.
So it would be preposterous.
So John Smith's object was broadcasting in what sort of a frequency? High in the FM band or a microwave or how?
Yes, it was high in the FM band. I don't have the figures.
Which means, of course, that it would be very information rich, because the wavelength of the shorter the wavelength, the more information it can carry.
That's true. But, you know, again, we have to pose the question, why would an advanced non-terrestrial civilization want to deal with a radio wave at all?
What if it isn't that? What if it's us?
Well, that's the implication. So
yeah.
let's design a scenario.
What if these are time travelers who are from 30 years in the future? You know, it could be, or 5 years in the future. We don't know. It could be from, we just don't know. But I will say this, just in remembering the implantation that occurred in my case, there were people there. I may have seen a gray, but I definitely saw two people. Two human beings, and the people outside in the backyard were speaking English. There's no question whatsoever about it. It sounded and felt like I was in the middle of a military operation of some kind.
Well, I cannot say that what you're proposing is not the case. However, it also may be the case that if there is a pact with more advanced civilizations from wherever, here, there, or elsewhere, that part of this pact, the agreement may be for whatever knowledge they receive, we want to share it. So piggybacking something, let's say they're using scalar technology for communication, just to put that out in theory, maybe we tag a radio wave along with it so we can also share that information.
So, yeah, exactly. That could be it. But now let's go on a little deeper into his case, because among other things, well, I know personally a lot of weird stuff happened because I saw some of it. For example, the bizarre experience with with that X-ray in your office, Roger. My God, folks, here's what happened. Roger had an X-ray on a desk in his office in a manila X-ray folder that you've seen 1,000 times in any doctor's office. He comes back from lunch. And this is an old X-ray. It's not new. It's dry. It's fully developed and everything.
And it was, just to interrupt you for a second, yeah. It was about fourth in a pile.
Fourth under a pile. And now what was it an X-ray of?
It was an X-ray of his skull.
Of John Smith's skull. And what happened was the printing on the... And I'm telling you this because I think you'd never believe it. I mean, the printing that was on the outside of the manila folder was somehow burned into the X-ray. It was just, it was impossible. Couldn't happen. And yet, there it was. I saw it with my own eyes.
Yeah, if there was some radiation effect or some wave effect that would have occurred, then every single X-ray in that pile would have had the lettering and numbers burned into the film. But as I said, theirs was about third or fourth down in the pile with the stuff on top of it and nothing else. Now, remember, Whitley, also, this happened on the same day that he was coming over to the office. And his car literally fried the computer coming over the camera.
Yeah, I remember. I was there when it happened.
Right.
Right. Now, you investigated his case. We've heard from him a good bit about how it felt to have the implant in and out and so forth, but and a certain amount about what they found but you actually went to his house with equipment to investigate it. What did you take with you?
Well, we took a Gauss meter, we took a Geiger counter, and we took a radio frequency detector, and of course a magnifying glass and other materials, tools, sort of, to be able to sample things.
Right.
When we got there, we looked first for magnetic anomalies, and boy, we were absolutely shocked. He had numerous areas of the house that were magnetic, including an avocado tree.
A magnetized. Now, folks, here's what you need to understand. Magnetic fields don't just sit there. There has to be a magnet. Otherwise, a magnetic field can't exist. They don't propagate. They don't flow through the universe like radio waves. They stay around the source of whatever the source of the magnetism is. Now, I might add that my house, after my implant was put in me, was full of magnetic anomalies that were bizarre. So that, and also we found one in a crop circle in South Texas, that was a freestanding magnetic field just like that. So it does. This is definitely a commonplace occurrence. Now I want to interrupt just a second because we are doing this on Ustream, and so we have some live listeners, and there are a couple of questions here. Was the X-ray somehow irradiated in transit? Now I'll answer that one right away. There was no transit. It was in a pile of X-rays just sitting there. It didn't, and it hadn't been like that just hours before, or a minute, or even just, when was the last time you looked at it?
Oh, it was probably a couple hours because we were expecting him to come, and I wanted to make sure everything was ready, so I
So this happened while it was literally in a stack of X-rays.
Right.
Right, under a stack of X-rays. Okay, here's another question. The characteristics of the FM transmissions, were they pulsed? Did there seem to be any kind of information encoding, or do they sound more like carrier signals?
Well, we don't really hear the tone. All we do is pick up the frequency, and then the way radio frequency lock works is there'll be a multitude of frequencies going by.
Right.
And then you can regulate the gate speed of how fast these are going by. And when we get to frequencies which seem to appear and appear and appear again and again, then we slow down the gate until the equipment locks onto a frequency and just stays there. So we don't know what the tonalities are of this frequency. We would have to then convert the frequency, into sound and actually see where it comes. One of the things that's necessary for doing this is a very expensive $75,000 piece of equipment, which will do that, and it will also freeze the wave in a waveform. So that you can look at it, and then you can analyze the wave, and you can do all those things.
Always cost, folks, because here's a man who took this extraordinary, and those of you who are subscribers to Unknown Country, you'll be able to hopefully see this weekend or shortly after that, report on this implant, developed at the very highest level of scientific expertise by some extraordinary experts to a conference in Washington, the Exopolitics Conference, I believe it was just recently. What was the conference, Roger?
Yes, it was the X Conference.
X Conference.
That was for 3 days, and then we held a press conference at the National Press Club.
Well, I didn't
Monday.
See anything about this in any of the newspapers.
Well, both Edgar Mitchell, the astronaut, and myself made major presentations with him telling the world that the Roswell event of 1947 was the crash of a non-terrestrial vehicle and its crew, and his source of information was high in the Pentagon. This is what he said.
Right.
And then we told everybody with our chief scientist, Alex Mosier, that the material we were looking at was non-terrestrial material and perhaps not even from this solar system. Now, you know, talk about embargo. There was nothing.
Let me, here's a good question for you. Saw Dr. Lear at the X conference. Make sure he talks about the fact that the implant came apart in extraction, then tried to reassemble itself in the vial of fluid, something I also witnessed with my own eyes. So Roger, why don't you tell us about that?
Well, what we do is we store the implant either intact or in pieces in the patient's own blood serum and refrigerate it. And after a certain time, I re-examine it to make sure everything is okay. Well, I took it out after 48 hours. We noticed that the particles that this implant, of course, had come out in pieces, which it doesn't normally do. So we had pieces in this serum. We noticed that the pieces turned a very dark color. And not only did they turn a dark color, but they apparently began to reassemble in the order of what it looked like on the X-ray. And I was absolutely astounded. I bowled over. I called the videographer we were working with, and he came down and filmed it.
Right. Yes, and I might add, folks, that this was for, we did a lot of filming of this for a special that A&E declined to run. And, you know, it was, this is the most extraordinary thing ever made about the UFO experience, in my opinion. This whole story and everything about this implant is in it. They would not air it. They just wouldn't. So they said that they exposed it to a focus group and nobody believed it. But I think the translation is it's just impossible to believe. It's impossible to face. And this is why While Edgar Mitchell's talk at the conference received a lot of press, yours didn't, and the existence of the implant and wasn't even mentioned in any of the stories I saw. These people are having trouble facing this. They have to face the fact that not only are they here, they're in our bedrooms and in our bodies, and deep, deep. Whoa. Maybe I want to know something, and I'm gonna hit you, streamers, with this question. Do you think I should get the implant in my ear taken out or not? What do you think, Roger?
As I told you before, my opinion has not changed. That is the decision which has to be made by the individual who has the implant.
I just wanted you to hear, everyone to hear you say that, because it is the professional response and the correct response. Okay, so now let's go back to John Smith's implant. And it has reassembled itself, and now you begin to take it for testing. And what happens?
Well, we began to get results back that were absolutely phenomenal. Now, of course, John Smith's case was the 15th surgery, so
right.
We had quite a bit of experience looking at the metallurgical tests.
Yes.
And, of course, the first we got back was the biological tissue, which, as in the others, showed no inflammatory response by the body and also areas where there was nerve cells where there shouldn't have been. Then we looked at the metallurgy we were getting back, and there was an incredible amount of material elements there which we had not seen before in some of the other implant cases. But now we were using equipment that wasn't available to us before. So by doing tests like ICP-MS, and I won't go into all the science on it, but we were able to look at the isotopes
right.
of elements, and we find that numbers of elements in this object showed what appeared to be non-terrestrial isotopes. So then again we went on and we found structures within the metal, such as carbon nanotubes, and carbon nanotubes assembled into carbon nanofibers, which look like long strings.
Now, interestingly enough, John Smith works in that field of carbon nanotubes, and he said they did not yet know how to embed them in metal in the way that you observed.
That's correct. It was only 5 years ago when the talk of carbon nanotubes able to exist in the scientific community, they were still battling, and many scientists said that it was impossible, these can't exist.
You know, I have to tell you that my experience of the Greys is that this is just feels like the kind of things they do and the way they think, the crazy business with the X-ray designed to sort of just flummox us and make us kind of laugh and be amazed at the same time. And that's on the one hand. On the other hand, something like this, it just has the feel of their kind of stuff. You know, a scientist who works in carbon nanotubes, you take the implant out of his body, and it turns out to contain carbon nanotubes. it just feels like them. And incidentally, there's a question, John Smith. Yes, we are talking about the man I interviewed on Dreamland for the listener who is curious. But go ahead. Now, Roger, so we've got a situation where it's meteoric iron, and it is got, there are a number of minerals in it which are non-earth isotopes. John Smith in particular mentioned nickel. So, and we have carbon nanotubes in it that are embedded in it in a way that we cannot yet do, and we have it broadcasting in the FM band. Now, is there anything left for the skeptic to say, no, this is just something the guy stepped on?
Well, I don't know. A true skeptic who makes a living being a skeptic can always find something to batter around. He's going to say, well, okay, you find these things, but how do you make them work? Well, we don't know that. We don't know how to answer that question yet, but we do know that we have, in our knowledge of electronics, this is a nanotechnological electronic device which has been designed for a purpose using the basic atomic structure of elements. We also found, remember, what we call orthorhombic sodium chloride crystals,
right,
which do not form in nature.
They don't, no. But they would be possibly useful in modulating a signal.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, let's take us back to the early days of radio. What did we have? We had a crystal set. You know, and we say, okay, well, the crystal can vibrate a certain frequency and so on, but nobody knew how it vibrated or how it did it atomically. And then for years, all aircraft radio was designed by using different crystals that were vibrating in different frequency
right.
for the aircraft receiver.
Right, and there used to be crystal sets. I had one when I was a little boy. I'm not actually so old that it was the only radio in the family, but I do remember them very fondly. And so now here we are with this situation, and this implant has been removed. It has attempted to reassemble itself. It's clearly off-world, and you have a very, very high-level report on it. What's next? What do you do in a world where people are in denial?
That's an excellent question, and we're going to have a science board meeting this coming week and try to address this issue. Now, you haven't seen the latest report, Whitley. I've got to send it to you. But this report will knock everyone totally off their socks, whether they're
well,
a scientist or a layperson. Our scientist, Alex Mosher, who is a specialist and also in nanotechnology and metallurgy and the testing, he actually knows how to design the equipment that tests for these things. And he has written reports stating all about function, referencing the object as being one that is purposely manufactured, and lists all the things 1, 2, 3, 4 that make this object do what it does. So it's a very clear, concise report that everyone can understand. We don't know at this point what we're going to do with it yet. I haven't even printed it out. I have it on my computer. I've read it about 4 times, and it's the most unbelievable report that I have gotten on any of these implant subjects since I started with case number one.
So give us a little bit more about it.
Well, he talks about how difficult it is to produce some of the structures that we find. For example, the carbon nanotubes, assembling them for use as a carbon nanofiber, he said they could act as an antenna circuit, for example. Also, and using the orthorhombic sodium chloride crystals, remember they are perfectly shaped, rectangular, and in varying sizes. How one would relate that to the atomic structure and the electrical impulses that go through the entire circuit as we know it to actually produce, you know, radio signals, or even as a receiving instrument or relaying instrument, relaying possibly information that is coming from the human body.
So it definitely, this thing is a signaling device, and no matter what, it is signaling basically in a way that we understand. In other words, it's sending out some kind of radio signals.
It's sending out information. We don't know, of course, what that information is until we're able to actually rebuild one of these things or to activate it. Also, the 16th case, which hasn't been done yet, I've been conversing with this gentleman, and I sent him a couple of my instruments, and it was putting out radio frequency, and it was putting out a 10 milligauss electromagnetic field. And suddenly, after he tested it, he tried it again in the next 2 or 3 days, and it shut off. It's not putting out anything.
Wow. So it was aware of its being tested.
Evidently, or there's an off and on switch, which is either operated remotely, or maybe it's something in the human body that turns it on and off.
It reminds me of the one that we had that time in Texas, Roger, where it was 99% pure iron, and we put it in X-ray diffraction, and the diffractor read the thing for a few seconds, and then it just disappeared from X-ray view.
Yeah, well, remember one of the last particle we were removing during the surgery disappeared.
Literally disappeared.
Disappeared. It just went right off the C-scan screens.
Right. It was all very strange, Roger. And, well, Roger, now, where are you now in terms of what you're doing in your world? Are you working on perhaps a new book, or do you have any other implant candidates lined up? Or
yes, I have other implants lined up. Particularly, this fellow that was is going to be our 16th case as soon as I raise the funds to complete the the surgery. We want to get it certainly recorded. I've been approached by somebody from the Sci-Fi Channel, another production company that might be interested in doing this.
Well, I certainly hope it actually arrives on the air. The Sci-Fi Channel also passed on our show, so.
Yeah, well, I hope it does too, but this is a new documentary series, and they are supposedly allowing people to just tell their stories and document whatever they want. I mean, that's the pitch. So I've yet to.
I hope it works.
True, I hope so too. But you will be the first to know.
Well, eager for these things to work, and
we'll ask you to maybe intervene if you're interested, and talk to the folks also.
Yeah.
So anyway, there's a lot of stuff on the bench. I'm doing some conferences again. I'll be going to Istanbul next month. And I just received an email from there. I don't know if you've seen video, you probably have, of the magnificent photos, close-ups of saucers taken in Turkey.
Yes.
And now, as of the first of this month, whoever they are, they're back, and the folks are taking pictures again.
And, good Lord.
And we are going there and actually watch them being videoed.
Boy, I'd love to do that. They never invite me to any of these things. I'm always the odd man out. You know, I've never been invited to a MUFON in my life at all, to speak. They just hate me so much. I'm really the target. I don't think they hate me in Turkey. In fact, I know Akhtan doesn't because he's been on my show. But I'd love to go to one of those one of these days.
Well, we can make that apparent to him. And I remember at one time you didn't really want to have too much public exposure. And,
that was during the Christian fundamentalist era when I was getting so many death threats. But, you know, that has passed, and those people have seemed to have calmed down and gone back to church. So,
well, we've got to get you back on the circuit again. I know so many people that have dropped out and then come back again. Look at Bob Dean. He said he was never going to do another conference, and now he's back talking about new stuff.
Yeah, well, and new stuff comes along all the time. And, Roger, I would like to thank you, as always, for being with us on UnknownCountry.com, and I would like to thank you, you streamers, for your questions. I appreciate them very much, and I appreciate your interest in this, as well as those of you who are listening, you, as usual, in the subscriber section. And do tell your friends about UnknownCountry.com and about Dr. Roger Lear and his work, AlienScalpel.com. You can't miss it, and it's a fascinating website. So, Roger Lear, thank you so much for being with us. Thank you for all that you do. A true pioneer, ladies and gentlemen, unique in this world, Dr. Roger Lear.
Thank you, Whitley.